Welcome to Sound Advice, and this is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Welcome, everybody. Another episode of Sound Advice. And as I said, this is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Got Amara and Matthew, as always, in the background twiddling the knobs, and they're probably the good. Got Sean and Adam with me, and they're definitely the bad. And so, unfortunately, that leaves me with the one option for myself. So, welcome, Sean. Welcome, Adam.
Hi, Steve.
Hey there, Steve.
So, quick intros. Sean, you've been on a number of previous episodes. So, Sean heads up our IT and digital transformation offering here. So, effectively, getting the best out of all of the opportunities that the digital world affords to businesses, I think, really is a pretty good, we should put that on some marketing information.
That
sounded pretty succinct. So, and Adam, you are a senior project manager within that department. So I presume you sort of work with a range of clients on, do you want to just give a sort of 10 second overview of what you do, Adam?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So my role here at Ballards is to project manage system implementations and also to look at risk in projects that are coming close to failing and they need to be brought back onto track pretty quickly. So I'm that person that gets stuck in at those two stages, really.
Yeah. And the good, the bad, the ugly, we sort of joke, but you know, it's the good, the bad, and the ugly in project delivery, is where. So stay tuned, people. You know, often people think, oh, digital transformation, don't know what it is. But, you know, hold on, because there's something for everybody in today's episode. Anybody who is involved in any way in any project or change or delivery of change. So we'll try and make it pretty useful. And welcome to Amara and Matthew, who are usually silent in the background. We'll see if we can get them to shout hello. Nope, can't even get them to say hello today. They're obviously busy pressing buttons and twiddling knobs, and they're the ones that make all of this possible. So, right, so cracking sort of straight in then. Projects, who'd have thought it? Sometimes projects fail. Who'd have thought that, eh? Adam, talk us through it. What are some of the common reasons projects fail? How can you identify, you know, potential problems early on? Talk us through project failure.
Yeah, this is one particular topic which no one ever wants to get to. And it's something that can happen from time to time. And there are most certainly ways and sort of common things to sort of look at and keep your eyes open for to make sure that projects don't end up in that sort of basket, really. So one of my sort of first points really is setting unclear objectives at the start of a project. There's nothing worse when you're going in to a client and you don't particularly know exactly what it is that you're supposed to achieve at the very end of that project. So setting clear objectives and sort of like the regular milestones and touch points throughout that project as well is very essential at the very start of a project. I'd also say sort of like one of the other key areas is scope and the fact that that can actually creep. So when you're sort of discussing the project and you come across the pure fact that there's so much to do, and then next thing you know, sort of elements are creeping in from other stakeholders or the key contact that you're speaking to that they want more things sort of like added into the project. That can and cannot be an issue. You address that at that particular point in time. But you most certainly do not let it happen without sort of addressing sort of like the impact that that could have on the overall project. So scope creep is essential in terms of sort of like why projects can fail, because if you don't spot that early and you don't address it, you don't address the timeline to fall in line with that and to make sure that you've got the relevant resource and it's going to be overall on budget at the end of it, that will not help the project overall in the long run.
I can see that. Project scope, you think, well, how would that, people wanting more, or you know, how could that make a project fail? But you're right, isn't it? So if suddenly client side expectations or output goes up, well, that is obviously going to need extra resource and has extra budget and may not be completed to the same timeline and therefore trigger, you know, a fail. So I totally get that. So
there's lots of different project management methodologies out there, but if you look at all methodologies, they all refer to a thing called like the project triangle. A project triangle refers to like the triple constraints for projects. That's cost, scope, or quality, as it's sometimes called, and time. And the theory is that during most projects, you're going to have to compromise on at least one of those. So for example, if you want to deliver a project quicker, then you're going to either need to increase your cost or decrease your scope. Or if a project where you need to increase the scope, then you're going to need to increase the cost and the time. And that's a gimme, and that's what project management's about. But the bad projects and the ones that fail is when you try and compromise on all these constraints. So you're trying to do something quicker, you're trying to do it more and do it cheaply. And what you end up with is a project that overruns on time and budget. And then you also deliver a bad final project, so you deliver bad scope.
So what sort of helpful hints have you got then for listeners? What sort of strategies can they use to stay organized?
You're absolutely right. I think you've hit the nail on the head to start with. Organization is key in any type of project. So if you're not already organized, get organized, and get even more organized.
What does organized mean, though, for a project? So I'm going into a new system implementation, a new CRM, you know, company-wide. You know, what does organized mean? How do I get organized prior to going into that project?
You have to be pre-armed with everything. So you have to make sure you've got the relevant documentation in place. You've got to make sure that you are having regular meetings. You are making sure that you are planning and doing to-do lists on a regular occasion. You are making sure that you are keeping everybody, not only your team and your resource, but your clients completely informed along the way. There's lots of ways of being organized, and there's lots of ways and lots of tools that you can use out there to sort of get even more organized in those little to-do lists, you know, project planning templates. There's lots out there to be able to access. But in terms of helpful hints that the listeners can take away, I'd say communication is key. Make sure that you're speaking and liaising with your teams, and you've got those communication channels set up. You've kicked off the project with those teams, and you are keeping that client informed at regular meetings and regular touch points all the way throughout your project. I'd also say identify risks throughout your project, making sure that any risks that you think that may could possibly occur are mitigated early on. Anything in that regard is going to be like a lifesaver, because you're not going to be able to think of absolutely every kind of risk that could possibly come up, but you can certainly mitigate a good sort of 70% of them if you're thinking as you're going through the project, what could possibly happen, what could actually possibly crop up. So yeah, those are the sort of like three takeaways, I'd say.
Yeah, I think I'd sum up for me that the three things are scope, communication, and resource. I know Adam's touched on each of them, but they're the three main bits. And I'd also include under resource. So you'd often see in projects that it will fail because you don't have either the right amount of resource or the right type of resource assigned to a project. You'll often see people get allocated to projects as well as their day job, and they're trying to do both, and one's got a give, and it will usually be the project. So you need to make sure you're clear from the outset what resource you need, what impact that's going to have. And that may include kind of ring fencing staff or backfilling staff to make sure the project's successful. But under that kind of banner resource, I'd also include the project manager. I mean, far too many times I've seen people try and assign inexperienced project managers to really important projects. And I always say, like, how can you expect like a rookie project manager to take hold and drive a project forward when you need an experienced project manager that's used to managing and mitigating risks, they're used to dealing with difficult stakeholders, and they're used to making sure that projects run on time and to budget.
So we've talked about it a few times before, Sean. What are some of the red flags, early warning signs that you guys typically see when you sort of either come into a project or see a project that might fall over? What are the red flags and signals for you guys?
First, I'd say there's no single warning sign to look out for, but there's many warning signs that you'd see and on kind of failing projects. But some of the common ones would be, so we talked about risk management. So I think healthy, well-managed projects will have well-defined and managed risks, making sure they're being monitored and mitigated. And it's best practice to make sure they're logged into a risk log. So whenever I see a project that either doesn't have a risk log or has a risk log that's empty, that is a big warning sign for me, because there is no such thing as a project without risks. So it's evident to me that if risks aren't being recorded or being ignored, that's a project that's doomed to fail. Another one I'd say is status reports. So good projects will have status reports are produced by the project managers to give high level updates to the project board or the key sponsor on regular occurrences. So usually on a fortnightly or a monthly basis. But if I see a status report that's constantly green month on month without sufficient commentary, then that shouts to me of a project manager that's just trying to portray that everything in the project is fine, but without any substance to back it up. And equally, if I see red items on a status report that don't seem to move month on month, or have a plan to turn them to amber, then eventually green, then that is a big warning sign for me. And I'd say lastly, warning sign to look out for is if you've got a project board or a project sponsor that don't seem motivated behind the project. For me, a project sponsor needs to be its biggest supporter. And if you don't have the sponsor on board, then that's a big warning sign that you've got a project sponsor or a steering group that's disinterested in the project. So that's also doomed to fail.
Adam?
Yeah, no, I'd echo exactly what Sean said in regards to all of those points. And some of the things like missed deadlines happen on occasions for particular reasons, but if they are being missed over and over again, that's a project that's not being run well. And there could be many reasons to do with that. But again, that's the planning, that's the organisation, and that's the communication skills that are not being done to make sure that the project is being delivered successfully. And then the impact on that will then probably be that you'll end up having more sort of like cost impact, which again is sort of like real big signs if sort of like costs start to increase on a particular project because they need to have more resource to fulfill the tasks that are in place. So here at Ballards, we make sure that when we project plan and we make sure that everything is in place from the documentation, that everything is risk managed, and that project plan is in detail to make sure that that client knows exactly where they are at any point in time.
So I think, you know, in my limited experience, guys, comparatively to yours, communication, as you guys have said, is key, and making sure that everyone involved, including end users of new systems and stuff like that, are brought in. How do you make sure that everyone is included, taken along for the journey? Because adoption of any change or project is key. There's no point doing something and then no one getting on board with it after an implementation of change. So how do you make sure everyone's along for the journey?
That is essential, that everyone's along on the journey. And to do that, you set clear goals and objectives at the start. You make sure that your channels of communication are set clearly with the clients and they know what to expect and when to expect it. And the same result in terms of the resource that everybody on your internal team is as well. But setting those goals and objectives early on, everyone knows what they're there to do and what they're there to hit. And then it's the project management role, my role essentially, to make sure that everything is singing as it should be and making sure that that plan is in place and all the risks are mitigated, because that plan is going to be essential to making sure that that project is delivered on time, to budget, and effectively.
We'd always have a communication plan in place as well, Steve, for our larger projects. So that communication plan, it outlines who is a project manager you're going to communicate to, when you're going to do it, the frequency, and how. So that can be update reports, emails, or even a weekly phone call. And it details who the stakeholders are in the project and who, how, and when we're going to speak to them. And I think for a good project, it's really digging down into who the stakeholders are. Stakeholders, it's not always the sponsor, it's not always the project board, it's not always a managing director. A stakeholder in a project could be a operator that's been in the business for 20 years, knows the business inside out, and knows the operations. So you know that you need to get those people on board because you know they've got the mind and the experience of the business. So it's working out who those stakeholders are, even not the obvious ones, and how we're going to communicate to them and how we're going to bring them along during the project.
Yeah. I've heard, you know, you're talking to clients about different approaches to project management, waterfall, scrum, you know, the Prince 2 methodology and all of these sorts of things. You know, to those listeners that aren't sort of qualified and trained to that level, give us some idea of best practices for project management, things that we can take away.
Absolutely. Like I said earlier, define the scope. That is key very early on. You make sure that you are communicating with your clients, knowing exactly what they're after in terms of this particular project, and making sure that you've got all those core deliverables down that you need to make sure that your project is delivered successfully. That'll be one of the sort of core best practices that I would recommend. Essentially, dependent on what methodology that you're using, every project will have a project plan. You've got to make sure that you are planning at every particular stage of your project. When you start a project, you have to break down the sort of, if it's a small one or a large one, if it's a humongous one, you just break it down into stages and you build that project plan out so that's very clear on what's being done at every stage. And you make sure that you identify and mitigate the risks at every point, and you report back on those risks in your updated sort of project update meetings. So everything's all covered off, and just keep monitoring that project plan, monitoring how you're doing, continuously liaising with your teams of people and working together as one, and having those meetings will just make sure that the project goes really, really well.
Yeah. Well, you touched on earlier too about the different methodologies. So like you talked about, there's the waterfall. So like your PRINCE2 methodologies, you've got Agile, and you will get some project managers that are very kind of stuck on one type of methodology. What I think that good project managers do is they've got the ability to be able to flex and use the best bits of each methodology when you've got the right type of project. So for example, sometimes on a system implementation, that would naturally follow a more waterfall type method where you're gathering your scope, then install the system, then test it, then go live. So you've got lots of things that follow after each other. Whereas if we're managing a development project, we may do that in more sprints. So you're doing more kind of show and tell sessions, more an iterative kind of project. What Adam does well, it's using the best bits from each of those methodologies for each of those projects and kind of tweaking the right bits to make a project work better. And I also think you get different types of project managers as well. So you will get some types of project managers that will manage a project to the book, following the PRINCE2 kind of manual. And whenever there's a risk, they will put their hand up and say, right, there's a risk here. What do you want to do about it? That's not what we do. We are very much kind of hands-on project managers. So we will still follow the methodology. But when there is a risk or an issue, we've then got the skill to say, actually, okay, there is an issue here. But instead of just raising the hand and saying there's an issue in this project, Adam will raise his hand and say, right, we found an issue, but here's option A, here's option B, here's option C. This is how we're going to resolve it. Here's the cost of each one. Here's the time for each one. And this is the one that I recommend. And that's the difference between a hands-on project manager to a project manager that's just going to follow the PRINCE2 manual page after page.
What's your favourite? I know you said, oh, we use a blend. You know, I get that. Let's give the listeners a bit of a takeaway. What do you think is a good methodology? And I know you've said it's got to fit the project, but give us a sensible methodology and a 30-second snapshot of what that methodology is.
Okay. If you look at the methodologies used around the world, the one that's been around for a long time and to be proven to be a real good methodology is PRINCE2. So that stands for, you might have to correct me here, Adam, I think it's Project in Controlled Environments. And this is a methodology setting out how you should run a project, the tools that you should use, so the Gantt plan, the risk logs, and how to mitigate risks. And it's a good, solid methodology that will be able to deliver most projects.
Okay. And I suppose people can find out more about that online. PRINCE2 is obviously widely recognized and very well known methodology. Okay, let's bring it together then. So the good, the bad, the ugly. Can I get three goods from project management, Adam?
Three goods. You've got to have a very clear sort of schedule of delivery.
Have a schedule of delivery. Number one.
A communication plan.
Number two. Okay. Number three. Make it a good one.
I'd say for me, have an experienced project manager on your project that's used to and experienced in detailing and running successful projects and how to mitigate those risks and problems that you're going to eventually hit throughout the project.
The bad. Three bads.
Not managing those risks. That's got to be one of the key ones. You're going to be falling over left, right, and centre if you don't manage the risk.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And it's also not knowing when to stop. And I think you will see projects sometimes that will plough on regardless. And you'll see projects that the project manager knows it's not delivering. The project manager knows that the timelines aren't going to be met. And you see the cost going up and the project just keeps going on and on and on. You need to stop, review, and take action.
Number three?
I would say resource. So not having either ring fence resource on your project or agreed resource on the project on who's going to be involved, how and when. And if they're taking time out of their day job, make sure that you're backfilling that or assigning other people to help.
Brilliant. And then finally, the ugly. And for this, guys, you probably have projects that are it's been really done really badly, I think, for the ugly. Like, just what's just the sort of worst kind of approach to it, to a project?
I was just gonna say, just one that isn't planned at all. The ones that are just, they might be the smaller type of projects as well, which aren't really planned out in enough detail. The people think that it's a fairly easy project to run, and it'll then go from start to finish and it will all be successful. But unfortunately, that is not the case. And then when you go to your larger projects, if you really haven't thought about that sort of wider picture and each milestone that you need to hit, and then all the individual tasks that sit under those particular, it will just fall apart. So, yeah.
Number two.
I'd say a real ugly project is one where you haven't defined what it is you're actually trying to achieve. The real ugly projects are the ones when you've got different views within a business on what the project's about, what it's trying to achieve. And I always say, how can you succeed if you don't know what you're actually trying to achieve? So really define what good looks like before you even start the project. What is the project actually going to achieve?
Was that two or three?
Two and a half.
I think that probably do for it. So. Okay, great. Some really clear advice there. Don't underestimate the complexity of projects. I think plan, communicate, have a schedule, make sure you've got a clearly defined scope, make sure you're following an appropriate methodology, and make sure you've got a qualified person heading it up. Otherwise, it is doomed to fail, is what I hear you saying. So, Sean, Adam, people can get in contact with you in the usual way, 01905-794-504, or they can email you at sean.devlin@ballardsllp or adam.strand@ballardsllp. Guys, thank you very much. Amara, Matthew, I'm not sure if you have found a microphone yet. Thank you very much for it being in the background and keeping everything up and running. Are they there? Or are they going to be silent again?
I'm here.
There he is.
I'm here.
Actually, there as well. Great. Excellent. Good work as always, guys. Sean, Adam, thanks a lot for your time. And
thank you,
catch you on the next one.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.